Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What he said, and now what I said. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. You know these guys. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This gentleman here is Nick Wright. Big show for you today. The New York Giants say they've got a plan. Trust them. Kyler looks like a lock for the top spot in the NFL draft. Trust him. But we got to start with the marquee matchup on the NBA docket last night. Well, trust me.
Maybe.
Easy, Nick.
Maybe.
Big game, Warriors and Rockets. Steph Curry called it a statement game. Warriors hadn't beaten the Rockets yet this season until last night, when they certainly made a statement. Everyone did. Boogie Cousins scored a season-high 27, tacked on 8 boards, 7 assists. Klay Thompson, he poured in 30 points. Dubs beating up on the Rockets, 106-104, snapping Houston's 9-game win streak. And they did it without Kevin Durant, still out with that sore ankle. Here's Boogie Cousins after his best game of the season.
I think it's coming. We've had stretches where, you know, it's kind of flowing for everybody. But, you know, this is a team that's been together for a while. And, you know, they play a certain type of way, and they're used to playing a certain type of way. So for me to just come in and, you know, I'm not expecting it to just this team to adjust to me. Obviously, I have to adjust to them. And, you know, I have my opportunities, so all I can do is just try to take advantage of those opportunities. And, you know, I think I had those opportunities tonight.
Nick, we were just talking yesterday about how much this team could really use the Boogie we all saw of old, not the Boogie we've seen this season. What did you make of Boogie's night?
Listen, the ultimate insurance policy, maybe the best insurance policy we've seen in recent NBA history, came through. They were without one of their true superstars, and Boogie was outstanding. It was his best game as a Warrior. He dominated that second unit because Iggy was in the starting lineup. They reshuffled the rotation a bit. Where the Warriors were particularly excellent to start the second and the fourth, that's where Boogie was particularly excellent. If you look at the plus-minus from the game, every starter for the Warriors was a negative except for Boogie. So that is a big departure from what had been the trend. The trend had been the exact opposite of that. When Steph's on the court, it's a positive. Klay, Draymond, but Boogie had been the negative. Now, I don't know that the Rockets are overly concerned with what happened last night. I think the Rockets know they had one of their worst shooting nights of the year. Yep. Their defense still actually did quite well, as they consistently do against the Golden State Warriors. And I don't know if the Rockets actually are upset that Boogie now feels even better about his playing time, better about his importance to the team, because I don't think Houston thinks this is a sustainable formula for the Warriors, particularly when Durant comes back. But credit to them. This was a game that if the Warriors lost, it's like you just said, hold on. They lost all four to the Rockets. They're only 2.5 back. Are the Rockets. Could the Rockets get the one seed again? That's now put to bed, so it's an important win. The Warriors avoid the season sweep, but I'm not going to overreact to it, but I will give Boogie credit because he has been the subject of a lot of criticism, and he had his best game since he was a New Orleans Pelican.
Yeah, this definitely was his best game. It was a good game for him because without KD in the lineup, and Boogie's played enough that he's able to get his wind. So they didn't have to have a restriction as far as his minutes. It was a great opportunity for him, a team that they were 0-3 going against them in the three previous meetings. We know that Houston has the only winning record against Golden State the last 2 years. Going into the game, they were 8-5. So they needed to see this from Boogie. I can understand what you're saying from Houston's standpoint, because going into the game without Kevin Durant, and one of the things you talked about yesterday, you know, they got house money. Like, you can go into the playoffs because they do have a lot of confidence in playing against Golden State. But yesterday, with KD being out of the lineup, the Rockets had won 9 in a row. From the beginning, they didn't have the same type of intensity. And I think that, you know, they were just looking ahead a little bit. The organization was celebrating. Yesterday, they awarded your friend Daryl Morey with a 5-year contract extension. He said he wants to be with the Rockets for life. So they got a lot of positive things going. The longest streak in the NBA yesterday. So against a world champion who was really focused, which I thought they were. They still have 4 All-Stars. Mm-hmm. Boogie's Cousins, his performance was the difference. And as you mentioned, it was the best game that he's played since he tore his Achilles with the Pelicans. It was good to see.
And go ahead, Jenna.
Well, Steph Curry called this a statement game before the game. So we really need to win this, especially without KD. Was it a statement win for the Warriors?
Listen, I think when you win a game against a team, the only team that's giving you trouble on their home court, when they're the hottest team in basketball, when you're without one of your best players, there's no way to discount that. That was a great win for the Warriors.
Right.
Yesterday, I think we got a little circular about is it statement? I don't want to parse the language. It was a great win for the Warriors and an important win for the Warriors. But I agree with C's point that the Rockets didn't seem to have the requisite intensity they have approached.
They were more every intense game when they went to Oracle without Harden.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat them without Harden. So this is the last meeting. I'm not saying that they didn't care about the game, but watching the game from the beginning, they didn't have that edge or intensity that we've seen. They ran off 9 straight wins. They were playing some great basketball, and they didn't shoot the basketball the way that we're used to them seeing. They still almost came back and won the game.
Right. They're down 13 with 4.5 minutes left, and then all of a sudden it's a 1-point game after a Chris Paul and one with 10 seconds left. Steph hits a couple free throws. Harden intentionally misses free throw. Warriors win by 2 if people didn't see the very end of it. The other aspect is this. Whatever the Rockets have learned through their analytics department and through their 3 matchups with the Warriors this year with Boogie and then the series last year about how to attack Golden State,
they actually have something concrete that they have a tremendous amount of confidence in.
And whatever they have not unveiled, 0% chance they were going to show their counterpunch in this game. They want to be able to present, and I'm sure it's the case for Golden State as well, that there is an element.
I don't know that because they're trying to get up to speed. And KD being down, the Warriors have shown to play well without KD.
The Warriors maybe even if they would have wanted to or not wanted to because it wasn't their full roster.
Right.
Maybe
the Warriors will have that. I'll give that to them once you get into a series.
Right.
They will have a counterpunch. But you make a lot of sense.
The point on the Rockets is they know to get to the NBA Finals, which they have not done since they had Hakeem Olajuwon and since well before Daryl Morey was there. That was back when Daryl Morey was at MIT, I think. They are going to have to go through Golden State. They also know they are going to have to present Golden State with something, whether it's blitzing a pick and roll differently, whether it's something on the offensive end that Golden State's going to say, oh, we have to adjust. There is no chance they're going to use that in the regular season in their final matchup rather than unveil it during the postseason. So I think the Rockets wanted to win, and if they don't go 11-41 from 3, maybe they do. But I think there were bigger things at play here. But that's not to take away. Steph, Clay, and Boogie were outstanding and got them that win.
Jenny, you asked me earlier, do I still have concerns about the Warriors? And I do. Andre Iguodala, he's not the same athlete that he used to be. Combined between him and Draymond Green, they were 2-9. They were afraid to shoot the basketball. So that's still going to be a problem going forward, even though when they get KD. So big win for them, but still problems as far as how good they're going to be defensively and the lack of shooting, especially when you force Iggy to shoot and Draymond to shoot.
And then the question you always bring up, does this team still have the switch? Because it looked like the switch was on for Denver, off for Phoenix, mm-hmm. and then back on again last night. We'll have to wait and see.
Last night, the defensive switch, I will give them credit. With Boogie playing a lot of minutes, the Warriors weren't great. great offensively last night, but defensively, they were flying around. They were great on the glass. They were approaching the game with the requisite punch and toughness needed. The Rockets, into the second quarter, had it. Into the fourth quarter, had it. The rest of the game, not so much.
And then we got to see if this is sustainable play by Boogie Cousins. All right, take a break. Coming up, did Kyler Murray solidify himself as the top pick? That is next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Alarm! The willies, the heebie-jeebies, panic. There are dozens of words for fear, but just one for an exceptional home security company to stop fear at your front door. SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe is home security that knows it feels good to fear less. This is award-winning 24/7 protection that protects your home through it all, through blizzards, blackouts, and of course, burglars. SimpliSafe has won awards from all the tech experts that count. SimpliSafe has no contract, no hidden fees, and most importantly, no gotchas. And they always keep prices fair and honest. Thanks to SimpliSafe, fear has no place in a place like home. Try SimpliSafe with free shipping and free returns. You'll get a 60-day risk-free trial as well. Order now and have your home protected within a week. Go to simplisafe.com/FTF to get started today. That's simplisafe.com/FTF. Be sure to go there so they know we sent you. simplisafe.com/FTF.
Welcome back. We'll get to Kyler's pro day in a second, but first, Vanderbilt, Texas A&M on the fast break. J.J. Chandler finds Savion Flagg for the alley-oop slam.
Can't defend that one. Nice alley. It's tournament time now, Nick, man. We're going to see all the high flying.
And you're going to see things like Vanderbilt and college basketball highlights, which we haven't seen in quite some time this year.
Okay. But
Jazz and Suns and
why
Kelly
on
Oubre
them this morning.
Gets the steal
Skip's
all the way,
be mad at
throwing
me.
Down the reverse flush.
Kelly Oubre, go ahead, see.
He's reinvented himself there in Phoenix, man.
Mm-hmm.
Good athlete, a little temperamental. Had a nice playoff series a couple years ago, but he's playing some good basketball.
When I was in Texas and my son was a freshman on JV, he was a senior at a high school up the road, and we went to go see him play. Oh, my goodness. This guy's been a monster athlete.
What's JV, man?
Oh, well, listen, some people as freshmen play on the junior varsity instead of the varsity.
Oh,
you're not familiar with that.
I thought that was one of those words, man, you came up with from the word club.
Uh-huh, this guy.
Grizzlies and Hawks. Trae Young gets it ahead to John Collins for the alley-oop.
John Collins has been one hell of a story this year.
I thought you and him were relatives or something. You was like just doing him a favor.
No, when I was talking about him earlier,
Dude stays on the program.
Absolutely. And these more than half-court alley-oops are becoming par for the course.
Kyler Murray was front and center yesterday at Oklahoma's Pro Day. All eyes on what he would and could do after skipping drills at the Combine. By all accounts, he performed well, completing 61 of 67 passes. Murray didn't get measured, doing nothing to quiet those who said his measurements were inflated at the Combine, because your height is obviously up for interpretation. Our own Joel Klatt was there, said Kyler has nothing to worry about.
He threw the ball so well today. It was effortless. He threw it as well as Baker did last year or better at times. He showed a quick release, great RPMs on the ball, threw it really well down the field. Firmly believe Arizona's going to take Kyler. He was terrific today. Effortless thrower of the football.
CC, do you think Kyler solidified himself as the top pick in the draft after his pro day?
I think that when people just stop listening to all the noise and you just look at the film and you start to analyze him just as a prospect, and you don't look at the height and everything. You look at where does the ball go. You start to understand the offensive scheme. You talk to the coaching staff. So you start to figure out, okay, what were you trying to do here? And then you start to understand, like, okay, this is what he had to do in this offense. And, man, he can flat throw the football. Like, he's very athletic, and he rushed for 1,000 yards and everything. But he didn't need to. Like, he is not Lamar Jackson. And I think the more we study him, the more information you get out there. Even though people say they watch college football, they like to put guys, if they look a certain way, into a certain bucket. Like, he can only do this. And that's why his pro day was situated was yesterday. He didn't make any throws on the move, on the run, because he knows people think that. So he tried to work on the things people think that he can't do. As a smaller quarterback, I love the fact that he went out and hired one of the great small quarterbacks in the NFL history in Jim Zorn, who was a lefty. He trained him and got him ready for his pro day and everything. So Jim's a great guy, fundamentally very, very sound, and he had him ready to perform yesterday. And you could see that he's just trying to remove some of the myths that people think. But when you stop looking at height, and you just look at him as a prospect, and you see the football and how he can direct the football. He can throw it high. He can throw it low. He can throw it with velocity. Like, he can put a touch on it. Those are all the things that typically, when you are a dual-threat quarterback or an athletic quarterback, those words they put with quarterbacks like Kyler, they don't have that ability to be able to throw. They can either throw the ball long and throw it hard, but they don't have that ability to be able to vary the throws, which Kyler showed yesterday. So great day for him. And whatever people thought about him when the day began, through the workout, that didn't change. So if they thought that, man, he's the best prospect in the draft, the number one quarterback, he solidified that. If they thought he was number two, he solidified that yesterday.
He 100% did not hurt himself. And I don't know how much you – I think it's hard in pro days to help yourself drastically because it is such a controlled environment. When you do really well, people are like, well, you're supposed to do really
well. Your receivers, your environment.
Exactly right. But he – to my eye, made no errors from the people watching. I mean, he's 61 of 67. One of those is a drop. And then he had three misses to the deep right side of the field. But, I mean, we're talking about completed over 90% of these passes and mm-hmm. With one drop baked in there.
Right, and there's an excuse for that. Deep to the right side of the field, especially for young quarterbacks because they're throwing to the middle, they're not used to it with the hash marks that you have typically in the NFL. They're tighter to the middle of the field compared to college hash mark. The ball for a right-handed quarterback is spinning more to the right. So when they miss long and out of bounds. But that's something that's easily corrected.
I thought it was very smart that he, as you mentioned, didn't do anything on the run. It was all in the pocket. Mm-hmm. It was drop back, maybe one step to your left, one step to your right, and throw. And C is totally correct that if I could get over the height and just watch it.
Yes.
If I was watching him there with no defenders around or offensive linemen around him, that was my first time watching him. Because you can't really tell how tall he is in these clips because there's no one around him. I'd look at him and say, my goodness. I mean, the ball comes out quick. It comes out like you said, with velocity. He can clearly hit every quadrant of the field. I have a hard time getting over the height.
And that's okay.
When I've got Haskins, who I think can throw the ball maybe as well, if not a little bit better, obviously doesn't have the athleticism, I'm going to go with the guy who's 4.5 inches taller. But what he did yesterday was he absolutely, if you already liked him, you love him. And what is amazing to me about this whole process, Jenna, is at the week 4 mark of last college football season, Baker Mayfield was nowhere considered the first overall pick. The week 4 mark of this college football season, question was, is he going to play baseball? And for the change to be that drastic and that quick in consecutive drafts potentially, to me is remarkable based on two guys from the same college with the same coach and what they both might end up going number one.
And what's the thing we loved so much about Baker Mayfield coming out last year? The kid was a winner. Say what you will about what he did, some of the antics and all of it. He was an absolute winner at every level. And I think sometimes that gets lost with Kyler Murray and his height and his measurements and all of it. The kid doesn't lose. He never lost a game in high school as a starting quarterback.
Man, say that again.
He has never lost a game as a high school quarterback.
In the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are five people. But look, there are some states that play football in high school that are different. California, Texas, Florida. Georgia. Like, the football is just totally different in them states. Now, there's others I can include, but in that state, at a big-time high school, didn't lose a game. A 42-0 state champions. And we typically, all these other quarterbacks, the white ones, we never miss that. Oh, man, he's a winner. We never miss that. But we have not heard, Jenna, we have not heard about his resume. He said He thought that he was the greatest high school player in the history of the great state of Texas.
And I don't mean to reference my time in Texas twice in one segment, but I was there when he was in high school. So I had just moved to Texas when he was a senior in high school, and then shortly there, or maybe he was a junior, because shortly thereafter he went to Texas A&M, which is obviously the second most prominent college in Texas. This kid was legendary. This kid, his clips, the way we showed Zion clips last year when he was in high school, that's what we talked about in the Texas high school football communities down there. And when I watched him then, I thought, man, this guy's going to be an amazing college quarterback, and I put the ceiling on him there, and I thought he'd go play baseball. And throughout most of this year, I thought he was going to go play baseball. He is now probably going to be the number one pick of the draft, and I'm rooting for him. He will be the first person, if he's successful, ever successful at a high level in this league at that height, but you can't deny what he can do with his right arm. You can't deny the accuracy and the strength on the football and the velocity, and I liked how Joel Klatt put it, the RPMs, the way the ball spins, like all of that, you don't have to be a football expert to see, say, okay, this guy can do that really well. Can he survive the physicality of the NFL? That's the only question mark on it.
He may not be a loud guy, but he's confident. To consider yourself the best high school quarterback in the state of Texas, you want that kind of confidence when you're coming.
Absolutely.
All right, take a break. Coming up, would the Lakers be in the playoffs if LeBron never got hurt? Discuss that next on First Things First.
This Saturday night, don't miss the biggest pay-per-view fight of the year. Two of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world put their perfect records on the line. Errol Spence Jr. takes on Mikey Garcia for the World Welterweight Championship live from AT&T Stadium. Spence Jr. versus Garcia, Saturday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, live on pay-per-view. Order now.
The Big East Tournament quarterfinals tip off today with Providence taking on top-seeded Villanova, followed by Creighton battling Xavier. The action begins at noon Eastern on FS1 and on the Fox Sports app.
Okay, let's go, Nova. I can't go to you today because I got to go get my teeth fixed with Jenna's guy.
My dentist.
They're going to fix up my teeth. But, okay. Nova, I'm there tomorrow.
So they better win tonight. Or this afternoon,
noon.
Pardon me.
Let's go.
Never too much information at a
Jay Wright, I'm available for dinner.
Time for us to go viral. Giants fans still in shock after the team traded away three-time Pro Bowler Odell Beckham to the Browns. One Giants fan in particular was very upset about the news. Take a listen.
I don't know why. Because either way, he's good. But those people are dumb.
Who's dumb?
Whoever ran the NFL that traded him.
Traded who?
Odell Beckham. He is the only one that's good on the team. Everyone else sucks, and now we're going to be even worse.
Thank
you.
We're
not even going to win one game the whole season.
Perfect.
Love it.
Well, sweetie, your intensity, but they do have a running back. He is really, really good. But, man, I'm telling you, there is a lot of Odell Beckham, number 13, female jerseys in New York City. That dude sold some merchandise. Mm-hmm. People love him in New York.
And right now, you can probably get him in a discount, dirt cheap price. Now, I wonder if her assessment, which is probably a little on the harsh side, is closer to reality than the GM Dave Gettleman's assessment, which is we can contend while we rebuild. I wonder at the end of the season, are we going to think the young lady sitting there saying, everyone stinks, we're not going to win a game.
Did you speak to a bunch of Giants fans yesterday? Most of them felt the exact same way she did.
Yes.
Big upset here in New York City.
It's a popular guy, man. It's amazing.
He's dumb. Whoever runs the NFL,
they're dumb.
That guy.
Doofuses.
All right, time for stories to start your morning this morning. Earl Thomas finally found a home, and it's not with the Cowboys, but it is with the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore signed the safety to a four-year, $55 million deal, $32 million guaranteed. See, how much better did the Ravens' defense just get by signing Earl Thomas?
Well, I have a tremendous amount of faith in their defensive coordinator, Wink Martindale.
Yeah.
Man, he runs a great defense. They lost a few players, but, man, Earl is a baller, man. He is a football player, and his mindset and psyche fits in well in Baltimore and how they do things. They're a defensive organization, very, very physical, a lot like when he had success in Seattle there. He's one of my favorite players to watch. I just hope he can stay injury-free. He's had a couple bad ones the last couple years.
I think a healthy Earl Thomas is still the best in the league at his position. And so if he's healthy, healthy, they just got better. I know they lost Eric Weddle, but he's better, a better player right now than Eric Weddle.
Absolutely.
Now, the Ravens lost three starters from their front seven, but they've retained everyone on the back end except for Weddle, and I think they had an upgrade there. This was one of the two best defenses in football with a healthy Earl Thomas. They should be in contention for at least in the top five once again next season.
All right, moving on. Teddy Bridgewater has an interesting decision to make. The 26-year-old quarterback is reportedly weighing staying with the Saints as the heir apparent to Drew Brees or signing with Miami and competing for the starting Dolphins job with Ryan Tannehill. Teddy met with the Dolphins yesterday. Nick, what do you think Teddy Bridgewater should do?
If he has to compete with Tannehill, I think I'd strongly consider staying in New Orleans one more year. If Miami's saying, if you sign with us, we're cutting Tannehill and it's your job, mm-hmm. then I think you've got to go where the starting job is guaranteed. But when you have a chance of having, you know, even if you win the job, if you have a rough stretch, people saying go back to Tannehill. I wouldn't want to go to get in a quarterback competition with a guy who's making the type of money Tannehill is. But if they are going to cut him, then you go with the starting job. If not, I'd be content sitting behind Brees one more
year.
Well,
one of the things you loved about Drew Brees, Jenna, was that he said, hey, look, Chris, I'm in as good a shape as any quarterback. I just don't brag about it. I got a staff of people. I eat all the right things. So we don't know how long Drew Brees
might
is
be
going
more than
to
one
play.
Year.
But the ability to have your own franchise, and if it happened to be in your backyard like Miami, Teddy Bridgewater's from Miami. He went to high school, Miami Northwestern, led them to state championships. So the ability to be able to play in front of your family, have your own team. Jim Caldwell is the assistant head coach. Greer, the general manager, both of these African-American. Head coach and African-American. Mm-hmm. It would be the first time that we have seen that combination. African-American, head coach, general manager, and quarterback combination in the NFL. We're going into our 100th year celebrating football. So that would be a very, very great combination to have.
Really cool story.
All right, moving on.
I just realized that. It was hard for me to spit that one out.
I saw you coming out on the fly.
It worked, though. It all got out. The Blake Bortles era in Jacksonville has come to an end. The Jaguars released their former third overall pick after signing Nick Foles this offseason. Jacksonville was 24-49 in games that Blake Bortles started. CC, will we see Bortles under center again in this league?
Man, I know this league, and they have a ugly, ugly history of giving guys who can't play an opportunity. So I would be naive to think that his career is all with. No, he's got a few more opportunities in it. Let's say Blaine Gabbert. Hadn't he been a starter a couple times, different places? San Francisco, Tennessee. Yes, Blake Bortles, he will get the opportunity to play somewhere else.
Jenna, how tall is Blake Bortles?
Blake is 6'5",
6'5". So, I mean, Denver needs a backup, right? I mean,
he's not tall enough for them,
man. He's almost tall enough. He's not tall enough to be the starter for John Elway.
No.
But he might be tall enough to be the backup, man. Go in there. That is true. Touche, Jenna Wolf. Jenna Wolf, get a little spicy political commentary. Well done. You've hung out with me too much.
3 points.
Listen, he's not going to be a starter anywhere. And I think it's going to be harder for him to just ease into a backup spot because he has become, fairly or unfairly, a punchline in a lot of cities. But do I think he's going to be out of football next year? No, he'll be someone's backup
There's
quarterback.
There's always a coach out there, Jenna, that thinks, you know something? Let me have this kid. He's really talented. I liked him coming out of college. He went to Jacksonville. They ruined him. I can resurrect his career.
Real quick. I'm sorry. What about a system fit, C? Where do they have a quarterback that's big, can run, and can't throw? Buffalo. He's the perfect backup to Josh Allen. Josh Allen comes out, got the same exact offense. That's an option as well. So maybe Buffalo works for
him.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown was officially introduced to the Raiders faithful yesterday. The marriage between AB and John Gruden will certainly be an interesting one to watch. Spicy versus spicy. The 7-time Pro Bowler addressed the media for the first time since this was announced, and he can't wait to dive into Gruden's offensive system.
I'm just here as a sponge to soak up every information Coach got to be as successful as I can be and to help the team take it to a new level. So I'm just excited to be in the same buildings with guys who've been great from the past. But I'm excited to be here and help things go to another level as far as the winning environment. My goal really is to catch Jerry Rice. I'm playing with a guy like Coach Gruden. Obviously, he know what it takes to keep me upright and fresh and to keep me out there for a long time. So. You know, it's a tremendous challenge. It's a challenge every year to prove my love for the game, you know, and I'm just taking it one year at a time.
One of the benefits we have of working with a guy like Nick Wright is he crunches numbers as things come out. So Antonio Brown mentioned Jerry Rice, and guess what Nick said while it happened?
Well, so listen, he said he wants to catch Jerry Rice.
Right.
Jerry Rice is at 22,800-ish yards.
Of course you know that.
Antonio Brown's at 11,200-ish, so that's easy math. If he doubles his production, right. If he has the career he's had, has the exact
again.
Same. Again. He'll be like 400 short.
Short.
He'll be a good month of football away, and that's the yards. Touchdowns, he's, I think, about 130 short, mm-hmm. which is, so if he has the rest of his career, the exact number of touchdowns you had in the entirety of your career, he'll almost catch Jerry.
So pretty likely.
So he's right there.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's right there.
But that's not fair to be, like, he can have a great tenure
in Oakland.
And never touch Jerry Rice's numbers.
Well, then what is going to be the barometer? Like, what's going to be considered a success for Antonio Brown? I mean, he already passed the first test. He shaved that mustache,
yes.
re-dyed mm-hmm. it its natural color, and mm-hmm. got rid of some of the things on top. But tell me what would be considered a success for AB in Oakland.
Well, Jenna, he's off to a great start. I know you hate when people change teams and then they get an opportunity. I'm sitting there waiting for them, and then they put off that first impression. You're like, I don't like it. It has nothing to do with can they play. They lose the first press conference. What he did was he sat down there. He did. He fixed his mustache. He had his hair in a hairstyle that was presentable. And he talked with the people who decided to extend his contract. And he talked about, I'm going to take this 1 year at a time. Because he wants to show them that he really loves the game. And before we had this big blow up, I told Nick for the longest time, this is one of the hardest working guys. This guy spends an amazing amount of money on his body. Like, he is a workout fool. He gets up in the morning loving to work out. And those types of guys, especially as a wide receiver, because he doesn't get into a lot of big collisions, he can play for a long time. So for me, he had the right attitude. It started with him and John Gruden sitting down in John Gruden's office, and John Gruden had every pass play that he had ever participated in with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they went through that film, watching it. So John Gruden knows the type of player that he's getting. But he told him, you're good at certain areas, but there's some areas you're not good at. And those are the areas I'm going to push you. And that's one thing with Gruden. Man, you will get tired of him every day being at. He coaches pro like they coach in college. And we haven't seen pros that really respond that way. So AB is a workout warrior. I believe it is a good fit. I'm glad they had Mike Mayock there because I believe that they're going to get some talented players there in Oakland. I believe the story is going to change there in Oakland. And it starts with a relationship. AB humbling himself saying, that guy right there is getting ready to get me to football. And if you want to play a long time, AB, sometimes it's not about your ability at the end. It's about your leadership. Is he going to be the face of the Oakland Raiders when they go to Vegas? So that's what he's proven in these first couple intros to him. So he's off to a great start. He's not a dumb guy. He knows how to market himself. Let's get back to the football part.
Yeah.
Because that's the part he is a master. He's the best in the NFL currently of what we had. Six straight seasons, 100 catches, six straight seasons, 1,200 yards. You wouldn't want anything else from a wide receiver. So I like the way he got it started, the relationship there with the media, the coaching staff. Let's get back. He went out to the field, worked out with Carr. This is who this guy is.
And narratives in the NFL about teams or players can turn on a dime. I remember when the Eagles and Giants were both had an open head coaching position, and the Giants hired Ben McAdoo, and the Eagles hired Doug Peterson.
Both of them up-and-coming offensive coordinators.
Exactly right. And 1 year in, Eagles fans were angry. Why did we go with Peterson? We could have had McAdoo. And a year later, McAdoo is fired, and Doug Peterson is a Super Bowl champion. And now McAdoo, it's not like he is the next hot name people are trying to hire for a head coach. And Doug Peterson seemingly as much job security as anybody this side of Bill Belichick. Narratives with Antonio Brown can change. Like, we can forget what has been a really, I think, uncomfortable and unfortunate, call it 6 to 18 months, if he produces the way he always has, the Raiders win some games, he doesn't have the type of off-field nonsense associated that was associated with him in Pittsburgh, and if at the same time Pittsburgh struggles this year,
oh,
then all of a sudden the narrative's like, oh, wait.
maybe it was the quarterback more, whether it's accurate or not. My point is sometimes the facts stop really mattering and it's the story that gets told.
Yes.
I know Antonio Brown will produce. I know Antonio Brown is going to work hard because, as you said, and this is, it is like a, the most common refrain in the NFL, whether people like AB or not. Everyone says, like, it's a,
you can't deny that.
It's like it's part of his name.
Hardest
worker in the NFL,
right.
Antonio Brown. And there, when it comes to stories and narratives, his story and narrative also is a great one for the totality of his life, coming from being homeless, where the circumstances, if he has a redemption act. We love a redemption plotline. We love to build you up, see you fall, and then build you back up again. And so I think he is, I think he is a great player. And I obviously think the Raiders got an absolute steal. Now, who's going to be his quarterback? What will Gruden show an ability to produce a high-level offense, which he's done very rarely in his coaching career? Those are fair questions, but that was a great start.
Right, and it's, you're talking about storylines. It's a great storyline that the Raiders would be back as being an elite team. It's a great storyline that John Gruden goes into the booth, comes back. It's a great storyline Mike Mayock coming out of television, talking about draft picks, talking about NFL, going on to run an NFL team. So they have more people. I know on this show we've been critical of them. I've been critical of them because they're just the facts. But that's a good story waiting to happen. Yesterday was a good day.
And the best way to change the narrative is for him to get it on that field and
just win games.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
What did
Moving
I need
on.
To say? Just win, baby?
By a all accounts, LeBron's first season in L.A. has not gone well. You could pick your reason why. Finger pointing, trade rumors, no playoffs, which is all but a certainty at this point. But truth be told, had it not been for a small wet spot on the floor, the one LeBron slipped on, tore his groin, and missed over a month of action, this Laker team was on track to make the playoffs. Yesterday, LeBron met with the media and said this season could have been very different.
It's easy to say, well, if, you know, but you can't do that. You know, for me, I can't do that. I'll be cheating myself. Obviously, I know, you know, how I was leading this team going into December 25th and how I was approaching the ball club was right on track on how I do every single year. And especially I was even more patient with the young guys. And unfortunately, one slip and fall here, you know, a tear of the groin, slap down on our other mastermind, Rajon Rondo, on his hand. Now we got a torn groin and a broken hand, and both of us are out for 10 and a half weeks combined. So, you know, definitely it was sucked at that point in time of our season.
All right, let's play a little hindsight, CeCe. You think the Lakers would have made the playoffs if it weren't for LeBron's injury?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think they would have made the playoff. I think it's fair to say, I don't think it's an excuse, but it's not only LeBron, but the Rondo thing. You can't have both of those guys out of the organization because there are a lot of things that not on the stat sheet, but the overall leadership and what these younger players need, someone to stabilize the ship, you can't have both of them injured because the effect from a leadership standpoint, when you get injured in sports, you lose a lot of your leadership. Like Kevin Durant, he couldn't lead last night. Professional athletes do not listen to guys that are hurt. Like, you lose that feel. We saw that with Nick Foles, man. What was Carson Wentz doing? Cheering. Like, you lose your leadership because you're not here to help us. And it's amazing. It's like you're on a different team when you're hurt compared to when you're in the flow of things, even if you're injured and still playing. So, yes, I think it's fair to say Christmas night, they beat Golden State. I mean, tremendous win. LeBron goes down.
No, and nobody, sorry to interrupt, just real quick. On Christmas night, that was when the Lakers were still, if you fall down, stay down till your teammates get there to pick you up. Nobody thought the veterans and the young players were disconnected. Like, LeBron said it there. He said, now maybe he is, maybe it's a little revisionist history, but he said, I thought I was connecting with the young guys. I thought, and then he was gone. They lost. The Anthony Davis thing happened. He, I think, then failed to reconnect with the young guys, and it all went askew. But on Christmas night, nobody thought. Even Chris Mannix had come around.
Where were they? They were in fourth place in the West?
Fourth place in the West, and I know it was real tight, fourth
but
to eighth.
But they were
eighth,
there.
But they were right there, and they were whooping the Warriors.
But then after that, and I like the fact, too, LeBron, he's starting to get a little more insight. He slipped a couple of times. I'm going to say slip because he didn't say I got injured. He said I tore my groin. Steph strained his groin. missed 11 games. LeBron tore his groin. He hadn't been saying that. He said he hurt his groin, but when you tear your groin, you could see when he came back, he was not at the weight that we saw him on Christmas night. You could see he didn't have the cardio, didn't have the wind, didn't have the stamina. When he went to the button to push it, Jenna, you were like, oh man, he didn't have LeBron activation mode. So all those things are accurate. But if LeBron James is healthy, the Los Angeles Lakers are going to be in the playoffs. Now, if he just has his normal season, we're going to give him 5 or 6 games where he can take off for load management, all those types of things. But if he doesn't miss those 18 games, the Lakers are going to be in the playoffs. Well,
and listen, all of that's true. And, of course, that was the key moment. Now, was it salvageable when he came back? Maybe. If Anthony Davis never demands a trade and the team stays more connected, is it salvageable despite the injury? Yeah, probably. If Luke Walton does a better job while LeBron's out, is it salvageable? Yeah, I think it is. If they don't have, you have a list in front of you of awful losses.
Awful.
During the injury and post-injury. Yeah, it's probably, but yeah, of course, the key moment's the injury. But here's the thing. You guys know this about me, sports or otherwise, I'm a history buff. This is how the NBA works. It is moments in time that are fork in the road. For LeBron, Skip brings up all the time, and he's not wrong in some regard. The Ray Allen shot. If Ray Allen misses that shot, LeBron doesn't have a chance to go 37-12 in Game 7, and the Heat blueprint is considered a failure. On the flip side, the game we were at after the Cavs won their first title, if Kyle Korver hits his shot, yep. Zach Lowe just wrote a whole story about this, the great NBA finals we missed out on because Kyrie was playing at his best level. LeBron's like, what would the narrative have been if Korver makes that shot, if the Cavs beat the Warriors with Durant?
And
then you're on my side on the GOAT
stuff. My guy, MJ, I was there for a bunch of them. There was a bunch of times he passed to guys wide open, and they knocked down shots. That being Steve Kerr, that being John Paxson, B.J. Armstrong, Hodges, man. They knocked down shots. So those were shots, too, that changed the narrative.
We're in New York City. How differently do people remember Patrick Ewing if John Stark's shot in Game 6 isn't blocked by Akeem and they win that title? How differently do we remember Chris Webber and those Kings teams if Peja doesn't airball the three in the corner in Game 7 of the 0-2 Western Conference Finals? Like, this is what basketball is. It is moments in time that we build narratives around one, I don't want to say random, but one incident. And LeBron's incident was he slipped on the floor and tore his groin. And now it's, wow, you missed the playoffs in your prime. Are you going to get a free agent? How good of a leader are you? Or should the Lakers trade you? Hey, listen, it's not unfair.
Right.
That is how basketball works. That's how, by the way, football, like how many, what is the narrative on those Bills teams? If Norwood makes the first field goal, in the first Super Bowl. Like, this is just how sports are.
So existential of you this
morning.
Well,
no, but I mean, that's just how it is. Like, I don't.
No, you're
nobody
right.
should pity
Sliding
LeBron
doors.
Or the Lakers. Like,
you're right.
That's what happens.
And narratives are created by small, tiny things or decisions or moments.
And last point, we never think about the things that didn't happen. How many times in LeBron's career did he avoid the wet spot? How many times could he have torn his groin? Where those have been championship seasons?
Right.
This one could be a championship season either way. So, like, that's just what happens. Now, next year, don't slip on the damn wet spot. Make the playoffs. See what happens.
Moral of the story, keep things dry.
What are you laughing about, see?
Coming
what
up.
What are you laughing about,
was
see?
The Warriors' win over the Rockets a statement victory? That is ahead. This is First Things First. Back here, First Things First, former NFL general manager Mike Tannenbaum joins the show.
Hey, Mike, good
to see
you.
What a beginning
you.
There.
Yeah. I mean, every day.
That's my guy. I got it.
Boy, was it?
He actually threw coffee on me.
Hey, man.
Okay, yeah, exactly. Hey. Watch it.
Big day in New York City. Both New York teams had a lot going on in NFL free agency. So let's start with the Giants. Tough day for Giants fans. Anytime you realize your team is in rebuild mode, you have to be concerned. Big Blue trading away Odell Beckham Jr. to the Browns. Their offense now, Saquon Barkley, a 38-year-old quarterback, and some other players. Many are now questioning the front office, which also let Landon Collins walk. But GM Dave Gettleman said Giants have a plan and, quote, this is part of it. Mike, you buying that the Giants have a plan after dealing Odell?
Absolutely. You know, we got to give this a grade of incomplete. You know, free agency is 24 hours old. It started a year ago. You know, they drafted Saquon Barkley, obviously a tremendous talent. And they, you know, knowing Dave and knowing his approach, offensive line. So
sign Nate Solder, draft Will Hernandez in the second round, and now they have ammunition if they want to go up and get a quarterback, you know, in this year's draft. Obviously, the safety is a concern, but they go out, they sign Antoine Bethea, and Julius Peppers is part of the trade
Jabril
as well.
Peppers. They bring in Jabril Peppers to replace Landon Collins. I'm okay with giving the Odell trade an incomplete, just like I was when they traded away Khalil Mack. I didn't like the trade, but you can't judge it until you see what they get back for him.
Right.
That's right.
I don't think, though, it's unfair to say the approach in year one was to come in year one in the introductory press conference, say, it's not torch the whole place and bring in a new 53, and now you got about a dozen guys left from when you got there, and you have you are starting the process of bringing in essentially a new 53 plus Eli Manning and Zach Diassi, your long snapper, that it is a divergence from where they thought they were initially.
Yes. Oh. It definitely is a different than what they thought. But my question to you is, because you've been part of a couple different organizations helping cultivate the culture and bring talent in there, how hard is it for like someone in Gettleman's position? Because I know, I remember, man, I've been on TV a long time. A lot of times my encounters with people are not necessarily great. Tannenbaum, we got some mutual friends, but I had said something on TV one time, and he was like, I didn't agree with that. He called my phone afterwards, and I was like, man, I really respect that. But how hard is it to convey what your message is and what you're trying to do? Because you can't tell the public everything, but you have to be able to tell them something. You're more comfortable with those message points. Explain that part to us.
No, Chris, that's a great point. As a former player, I think you'll appreciate this. When you're Dave Gettleman and you're dealing with Eli Manning, your audience is the locker room, because they're going to say, hey, this is a guy that's a championship quarterback in New York City, and how they treat him is really important, because all the other players are going to say, how you treat Eli, hey, that's how they could treat me one day. So, Nick, going back to your point, yeah, maybe they didn't get the quarterback a year ago, but Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur weren't hired on a one-year deal. So, to me, they got Barkley. They're starting the offensive line. Look, they lost a generational talent in Beckham. We all know that. But, you know, we're sitting here. It's, you know, free agency is less than 24 hours old. You know, let's see where we are after the draft.
Gettleman said that you could win. I mean, he was asked a million different ways, but that, yeah, this team could still win while they're in this sort of rebuilding the roster mode. How and is that possible?
Yeah, I think the key in today's football is you have to win for today and develop for tomorrow, because if you're just developing for tomorrow, you could look in Cleveland, right? They've developed for a lot of new head coaches and a lot of new GMs. So I think what Dave's talking about there is you go back to some of those great Carolina Panther teams that he was a part of.
Yes.
Strong defense, strong front seven, strong offensive line. So, again, going back to last year, adding Solder, drafting Hernandez, I think that's what Dave's talking about.
Right. In your association with the league, given that right now, man, everyone is about as part of Saturday football in college is starting to come to the NFL. How effective? Because I always say you're going to have a couple organizations going to be able to play power football, because that's just what they're going to do. Either their quarterback's not going to be able to throw, or they just don't have the weapons to be able to do it. In today's NFL, what Gettleman is trying to do, trying to duplicate what they did in Carolina, how effective, or do you think, is that the most effective way to build a football team when now we're basically throwing it 65 to 70% of the time?
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Obviously, the sport's evolved, but, you know, you can look up north at, you know, Coach Belichick and the way they've won. You know, they've won a lot of different ways. You know, a couple of years, you know, when they've had prolific, you know, offenses with, you know, Randy Moss, and you know, they put a lot of points up. And other times, like, you could look at the team this year, you know, you wouldn't say that was a prolific offense.
Very good point, yes.
Right, but they were effective. So I think that's what good coaching and good organizations are, is like, how do we have a chance to win this year and keep building? So your point's fair, Chris. You know, what plays on Saturday is what's going to come out and we're going to play with. And you do have to evolve, but you can still have those core principles.
All right, so you bring up Coach Belichick. I am very confident, without knowing Bill Belichick personally, that Bill Belichick, what he would be doing this week once he gets off the beach, wherever he's vacationing, while
a well-deserved break.
Absolutely. Yeah. While everyone's overspending in free agency, is he would call up Eli Manning and he would say, we really appreciate you and your championships, and we want to keep you here. We've said we want to keep you here for another year, but I need you to take a salary reduction. There is not a market available for Eli Manning this year to make $17 million, which is what the Giants are going to pay him in bonus and salary. We need to free up that space. How do you have that conversation if you're Dave Gettleman? And would you have that conversation of, hey, you're going to become the highest paid player in the history of the sport this year. You're going to pass your brother. Manning brothers done well for themselves. But we need you to take a pay cut.
Or do you think he's untouchable within the organization?
You know, Nick, one of Coach Belichick's superpowers is before he went on the beach 6 months ago, he was playing for his replacement. So you could look at the left tackle situation in New England. Nate Solder leaves. They bring in Trent Brown. Yeah. They draft Isaiah Wynn from the University of Georgia a year ago. He's going to be their new left tackle. So that replacement's been in the building for a year. Garoppolo is a great example. They draft him. So if they have to have that conversation with Tom Brady, they're prepared. The question is, you know, Kyle Laletta, a fourth-round pick out of Richmond last year, can he replace, you know, Eli Manning? Answer is probably not at this point. So when you have those hard conversations, that preparation takes 6 months to a year beforehand.
So you're saying you can't – you think it's harder to – I just want to make sure I understand. Harder to ask him to take a pay cut when he knows, if I say no, you're not cutting me.
That's right. That's exactly right. Like, you have to plan for that conversation not to go great. I've had a lot of those in my career. Mm-hmm. Some have gone well. Some haven't. But you want to be prepared for that player to walk. And more importantly, what's the plan when he walks out the door? And sometimes that answer takes about 12 months to get ready for.
All right, Mike, stick around. Coming up is Kyler Murray, the guaranteed number one overall pick. That's next on First Things First. Back here with Mike Tannenbaum. It's time for your Subway Choice moment. Kyler Murray was front and center yesterday at Oklahoma's Pro Day. All eyes on what he would and could do after skipping drills at the Combine. By all accounts, he performed well, completing 61 of 67 passes. Our own Joel Klatt was there, and he said Kyler has nothing to worry about.
He threw the ball so well today. It was effortless. He threw it as well as Baker did last year, or better at times. He showed a quick release, great RPMs on the ball, threw it really well down the field. Firmly believe Arizona's going to take Kyler. He was terrific today. Effortless thrower of the football.
Mike, we were talking earlier about how quickly the narrative changes sometimes when it comes to the draft and where guys go. Do you think Kyler solidified himself as the top pick in the draft? 6 weeks ago, this is not what we were talking about.
Yeah, he very may well have. I saw him play live a couple times last year, and I thought in particular against Alabama when he played well in the second half, that to me showed competitiveness, overcoming adversity. I think Russell Wilson, Baker Mayfield have answered the question, can a shorter quarterback, you know, make it and be as productive as, you know, they've been? You know, my bigger question is, if you're Arizona, are you taking him? You just took Josh Rosen a year ago. You traded up, Chris, from 15 to 10. And you could be sitting there and you could get a pass rusher like a Nick Bosa and pair him with Chandler Jones. Are you better off doing that and saying after five games, I'm going to give up on Josh Rosen?
If you are, if you do decide that you want Kyler, how much of it is at that point Josh Rosen is, you have to look at him as a sunk cost and you just get as much as you possibly can, or is part of your decision about whether or not you can take Kyler, even if you love him, about how much of a return can we get for Rosen? Meaning, let's say you love Kyler, but no one wants to give up more than a second-round pick for Rosen.
Right.
Does that change your decision on drafting the quarterback, or does it have to be, do we love Kyler, do we not, and then get the best deal for Rosen based on that?
Yeah, exactly. It starts with that. If you want to build your offense around Kyler Murray, again, we've seen it with Russell Wilson. We've seen it now with Baker Mayfield. You can do that. You know, the concern's going to be is he built to last? It's a big man's game. Can he, you know, handle things and be sustainable from a physical standpoint? Again, I thought the Alabama game was important because we saw him play, you know, better in the second half. And if you make that decision, Nick, and say, hey, Kyle's our guy, then you get the best deal you can with Rosen. But from a front office perspective, I'm not giving up on a guy. He played five games last year. He beat Green Bay on the road. And you got to get a chance to get Nick Bosa and a young quarterback. I like that pairing, you know, better. But again, if you say Murray's your guy, then you cut your losses with Rosen and you move on.
I like the fact that you went to watch him play this year, because very seldom are we getting that type of perspective. When you were sitting there watching him, did you think you were watching a first rounder? That's my first question.
Absolutely, because he has great short area elusiveness and quickness, and he has his arm talent. I agree with Joel's assessment. It's certainly underrated because he can make all the throws, Chris. Again, the one question you would have is, as a starting quarterback in the NFL, can he withstand the rigors of week in and week out?
Right, and you were doing the same thing when Russell Wilson came out. You mentioned Russell, what he's done. Baker Mayfield, what he's done. I know they've helped change the perception, but how much has the perception changed when you're sitting there watching a guy at 5'10"? We didn't know then, is he 5'9", is he 5'10", in the Final Four of, in college football. How much was the perception there when you were watching Russell and he came out? And Snyder and the group there in Seattle said, man, if he was 2 inches taller, he had been a first-round pick. How much different is it now looking at Kyler and how much the league and the optics have changed?
No question about it because of those guys' success. And, again, if you have a plan, if you're taking him with the first pick overall, you know, the head coach, the offensive coordinator, the GM, they'll all have to be on the same page. How can we put this player in a chance to be successful? How can we build an offense? And obviously a guy like Cliff Kingsbury coming from Texas Tech can certainly design an offense to put Kyle in the best chance to be successful.
I'll ask this to anyone here. What else at this point, now that the combine and the pro day are behind us, what else does Kyler Murray have to prove leading
up to
the draft?
Don't get in trouble. Like, do well in your individual workouts, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me, you guys can tell me if I'm wrong. But I think at this point, it's hard to go forwards. It's just don't go backwards.
I disagree with that, Nick. Okay. If you're going to put all your eggs in a player's basket, you got to bring him in. You got to make sure that, hey, how's he process information? Mm-hmm. How's he deal with adversity? If there's a three-game losing streak and he has to go face the media, how's he going to handle it? Have you talked to the equipment people? Have you talked to the trainer? Ooh. All those things are critically important because he is the face of your franchise. And as we know in pro football, Chris, there's going to be a lot of adversity. So how he handles that is going to be critical.
Right. And what Mike's talking about is keep the process going. Nick makes a fair point as far as you're not going to drop if they think you're number
one. Football
the
evaluation.
Obvious aspect. Right. Man, don't get in trouble. But he's not a person that has shown us. And he doesn't get credit for that. He doesn't get credit that all he has done is win. He doesn't get credit that he's a great leader. He doesn't get credit that he comes from a two-parent home, from professional parents and everything. His dad had played at a high level. He doesn't get credit for those things. Doesn't get credit that he doesn't get in trouble. So right now, what he needs to do is learn, what Mike's saying, learn pro football. The organization that's in love with him, learn more about him. So it's kind of a meeting of a coming together. He needs to learn more about pro football. Work on his leadership skills because it's different in leading high school teams to championships. I respect it. 42-0 in the state of Texas, much respect to it. It's great what he did, taking over from Baker Mayfield, hoisting that Heisman Trophy, battling Alabama after an awful first half. Much respect to it. But leading grown men, man, it's a sport in itself in the National Football League. And you're getting ready to be put in pressure situations on and off the field, continuing to grow that process.
And if we went back a year ago and we were talking about Baker Mayfield and obviously John Dorsey and the Cleveland Browns deserve a great job, but there were more boxes for, you know, they had to check. Hey, he started at Texas Tech and he moved on. And same thing with Kyle Murray. Like, you have to drill down on that baseball question, Nick, because if you're going to make this guy the first pick of the draft, you have to know, like, we're building around this guy hopefully for the next 10, 15 years.
I want to ask one philosophical question about the draft before we move on. Because you talked about all the things that go into making a quarterback the first-round pick, much less first overall pick, face of your franchise. Ostensibly, they did all this stuff with Rosen. Right? Like, they talked to the equipment people.
That's right.
So that's one of the reasons why you traded multiple picks to move up to get him, why you'd be hesitant to move on from him. If they decide not to go with Kyler Murray at number one and stick with Josh Rosen, do you think in today's NFL, when there are elite quarterbacks available in the draft, you can get fair value at the number one overall pick without taking a quarterback? Meaning a team like Arizona, if they're not going to take a quarterback, is the only way to get the true value of that pick trading the pick to someone who wants the quarterback and getting a bunch of assets for it?
Well, yeah, that's certainly that's one way to do it. But also, if you feel like that number one pick can impact the game, and when you look at these edge rushers and Nick Bosa in particular, he can take over a game all by himself, and he can change that franchise as quickly as possibly a quarterback, arguably even faster, knowing that sometimes these quarterbacks take a year or two. Yeah, they take time. So, you know, again, if you believed in your process with Josh Rosen, I wouldn't give up on him. Now, if you get an incredible trade, like you mentioned, I think you got to listen to that.
But you'd be comfortable taking Nick Bosa number one.
No question about it, because a pressure player is so valuable in today's game. Mm-hmm.
All right, Mike, thank you so much for joining us today. Great insight.
You can call.
Take a break. Coming up, will the Warriors drama derail their title chances? Next on First Things
First. Get some of that.
In 2 days, two of the best pound-for-pound fighters on the planet put their perfect records on the line at AT&T Stadium for the World Welterweight Championship. It is Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, live on pay-per-view. Order right now.
Jenna, you remember when we were much younger, that welterweight division, Marvin Hagler,
sure.
Sugar Ray Leonard,
sure.
Roberto Duran, good Lord.
You're amazing, Steve. Go ahead.
We'll get to Boogie's big game in a second, but first, you guys see this? Vandy, Texas A&M on the fast break. J.J. Chandler finds Savion Flagg for the alley-oop slam.
That's Vandy. Don't say nothing bad about him, Nick.
I'm not going to say nothing bad about Vandy.
Skip jump will
come at my head, man. I don't want them problems. Vandy's going to be a problem. I get it. I understand. Vandy got some players, but they're getting dunked on right there.
Boom.
Get it, Savion Flag.
Grizzlies and Hawks.
Oh!
Whoa!
Check
stop it.
Out.
I thought not a foul?
Man, I thought the highlight was the pass. The highlight is the reverse.
Nick, do you know someone in his family? Because you keep working him into the dang on highlights. Man, like, seriously.
I don't know anyone in John Collins'
family. Did you
family,
get a number or something at the last family reunion or something?
I'm telling you, this guy, he's a budding
your
star.
Your law firm
in this
is
league.
Starting to represent basketball players.
Same
now.
Game. DeAndre Bembry breaking up the pass, finishes with the 360.
How do the Hawks only got 24 wins, man? They got Bembry, who's always on the highlights.
Wow.
Trae Young, who would win Rookie of the Year 9 out of 10 seasons. Just Luka, bad luck for him. John Collins.
I didn't know if he was going to get there on this one.
He didn't know either.
Okay, like he used to be a high flyer. He hadn't tried this one in a minute.
A 360 in game's tough. And don't you say that wasn't no 360. Say it's some 280 or something.
No, it was okay. I could see his dreadlocks was facing the rim when he took off.
Biggest game in the NBA last night, Warriors and Rockets. Golden State playing without Kevin Durant and without a win over Houston all season. And they came out strong, beating Houston 106-104, snapping the Rockets' 9-game win streak. Boogie Cousins, big night for him, season high, 27 points. Been a lot of drama surrounding the Dubs this season. Here's Boogie on just that after the game.
That's something every day. It's like, you know, my grandmother, when I was younger, she had this show she used to watch. I'm sure y'all heard of it, As the World Turns. You know, it was just, she called it her story. I gotta watch my story. You know, I used to watch it with her, and you know, every episode, it was something. That's what this has turned into, As the World Turns.
Do you like starring in that?
No, I don't. I play basketball.
But you know what? We loved As the World Turns. Oh, I couldn't get enough of it. Every day I wanted more.
I had a few of my buddies almost flunked out of college watching As the World Turns.
Right?
Man, not going to class up in the dormitory.
That's great. That's why we can't get enough of it. That's why we feast on it as members of the media. I'm sorry he doesn't like to star in it. Is it overstated how much drama's on this Golden State
team? Well, listen, and I think Draymond said it after the game when he was told what Boogie's comments were. The whole NBA is a soap opera. Like, this is as popular as ever. Absolutely. And so now the Warriors have more eyes on them, and they have had more drama. They have had the Draymond-Kevin Durant thing happened. Kevin Durant's general discontent with the media and how they're covered happened. And Boogie Cousins, we caught him on a good night now, where he can be introspective and say, hey, yeah, it's just the drama of the league. Reminds me of my grandma's stories. He's coming off his best game of the year, and they beat a team that had beat him 3 straight. So now, I don't think the drama's over. I don't think the drama is even close to over in Golden State. Now, will the drama be enough to prevent them from winning a title? Probably not. But aside from injury, drama's the only reason they wouldn't win a title. The only reason they wouldn't win a title is if they fray at the seams and come apart, barring, obviously, injury. And so it's been a real thing for them. Drama's probably part of the reason that Kevin Durant won't be on the team next year. Like, not because he wants to get away from the drama. I said that the wrong way. One of the causes of drama is that Kevin Durant probably isn't going to be on the team next year.
And without the team knowing, was obviously Draymond and the team, the members, they think that he's going to not be there. The fans, where are they right now? Mm-hmm. Is he going to be here? They're moving to a new arena. So, Boogie Cousins, though, I like his comments after the game. You're right, Nick. They caught him on a good day.
Yeah.
Man, he went deep, talked about his grandmother watching As the World Turns. But you know, Boogie, we knew there was going to be a certain amount of drama with championship teams, especially when you're trying to three-peat. But you're the one started it in free agency. What was his messaging point? Oh, this was my what move?
Chess move.
This was my chess move. He started it. He joined the greatest basketball team that we had seen. He joined them. He took less money. Like, so that started the drama. Kevin Durant, I'm not going to make my decision. I'm not going to let people know. Because he could have easily just said, you know something, I'm going to be here for a long time. Don't worry about it. So him, the spat he had with Draymond, that was real. They let us inside and gave us the family business as far as what's going on there that they're not happy. So, yes, with championship teams, I was very, very fortunate that I traveled with Michael Jordan when they were trying to three-peat, when they were trying to do all the stuff they were trying to do twice, the first three-peat and the second one. And there was always story. Man, one time Dennis Rodman just disappeared. I'm getting ready to go to Vegas. Man, they had all kinds of stuff. So we didn't have the attention then that we have now. But there was significant drama anytime that we've gotten situations like this. That's why it's so hard to three-peat.
But if there's a team that can overcome that or stay focused enough to overcome that, wouldn't you say it would be the Golden State Warriors?
Oh, I wouldn't say the focus is their strength. I think it's the waves of talent they can throw at you. I think that they are a team that is actually personality-wise susceptible to the drama. I think, listen, they have two, I think, stabilizing forces in Steph and Clay. And to continue the soap opera analogy, Clay all of a sudden was a new character in the drama just last week. Like, our fans stink this week.
He came out and apologized.
He was like, nah, that ain't
my
me.
Bad.
I didn't have my medication.
I said tan.
But they've got three very, I would say, volatile figures. We know Boogie's volatile. Has been his entire career.
It's the reason we spent all day yesterday talking about who's going to walk up to Boogie and tell him he can't start in the playoffs. That's drama.
Absolutely. We know that Draymond Green is a volatile figure, and Kevin Durant has become, I don't know if volatile is the right word, but unpredictable. Like Kevin Durant, so you don't know what attitude you're going to get from any of those three guys on any given day. Now, I think Iggy's even keeled. We know Clay is. Mm-hmm. And Steph is almost he's the poobah of the team almost, like the total calming force. And I think they're going to be fine. They have so much talent. They just beat the Rockets in Houston last night without Kevin Durant. But the drama is a real thing. It's not created drama. It's not we're out of things to talk about, so we're making up. Mm-hmm. We're trying to parse words here. It's a real thing, and it's a thing. Steve Kerr, his coaching is done not during – his biggest coaching is done not during the game. Right. It's on juggling all
That's
of that
point.
And keeping guys on the same page.
I think it's a great point, too, as far as the NBA. What we have going on in the NBA now, it is as the world turns. It is a tremendous drama. It is a tremendous soap opera that's playing out on a daily basis. And they just happen to be the best team, best collection of talent that we've ever seen. So why shouldn't there be drama around the team that's trying to do record-breaking things?
And anytime there's a great team, there's only one instance I can think of where a great team for an extended stretch was drama-free, and that was the Spurs with Popovich and Duncan. Robinson in the beginning, but then Popovich and Duncan. And that's because I think part of it was the influx of international players that the media wasn't that interested in talking to early on. Duncan's attitude. Mm-hmm. But the Bad Boy Pistons, there was drama. Isaiah and Michael Jordan's beef. There's the Bulls teams. There was always been drama with great teams that are trying to do great things.
It is as the world turns. It's also the bold and the beautiful.
I was going to say,
young and the restless.
It could also be days of our lives. Yeah, of course.
Young and the restless season.
Yesterday,
gotta take a break. We're back after this.
Sharon got 3 years. The other lady got 30 years.
Very good.
Oh, yeah. I'm on it, man.
Very good.
I'm on it. Spoiler alert, man.
I was in love with a couple of them.
Time for Say What? So yesterday, Antonio Brown was introduced in Oakland. His new coach, John Gruden, was asked about the role he's expected to play. Say what?
He can play split end. He can play flanker. He can play in the slot. He can return punts and sell popcorn at halftime. We're excited about this guy. And we're going to put him to good work.
Man.
All right. Well, there you go.
Every time I hear Gruden... He just sounds like someone on Saturday Night Live
who's
playing the character of John Gruden.
Football coach. Yep.
Like, back to him. You know how many people call me saying they want to be Oakland Raiders and everything. Now, listen, this is a coup for him. That was a great moment. Yesterday was the highlight thus far of his tenure as a Raiders coach.
Yes.
Right?
After the initial press conference, he's going to leave television and come and take over the Oakland Raiders. Before they announced that 10-year deal, but this is a good start to. We're going to reboot it. We're going to let them start over.
When's
the last time
you had some popcorn? When's the last time you had some popcorn?
I knew that was going to come.
When's
like real popcorn from a movie theater or just.
Real popcorn. I don't know. There's fake popcorn. What are you going to have? Like quinoa popcorn?
You can make it with a spray.
Answer the question.
I'm sure I've had some.
Yeah, okay.
I've had popcorn.
Okay.
Popcorn's delicious.
I had it last month.
I've had it last month.
That's a lie, but just say it just so we can keep the show moving. Just trying to get you involved, Jenna Wolf.
I had it for dinner last night. Time now for stories to start your morning. All eyes were on Kyler Murray at Oklahoma's pro day yesterday. By all accounts, he performed well, completing 61 of 67 passes. Now our own Joel Klatt thinks he's locked in at the number one pick. Nick, you agree with Joel Klatt?
I don't think he's locked in, but I don't think he did anything that to hurt himself yesterday. If Arizona had made the decision, then yes, then he would still be there. Mm-hmm. I think Arizona still has to figure out what can you get from Josh Rosen and what did Steve Keim see in Rosen that made you trade up to get him that you no longer see after 13 starts in the NFL? Those are questions you have to analyze alongside the Kyler Murray analysis.
And it becomes harder to get off of Rosen when you've already realized I made a mistake in the coach. You didn't give the coach a chance in Wilkes firing him after his first year. So this Rosen, but Kyler, for me, it was about how do I convince another team? So what if Arizona? They don't think I'm number one. He might have convinced another team to build trade up yesterday. He did well for himself. Great job by Jim Zorn getting him ready, the former Seattle slinger of the football, one of the best shorter quarterbacks we've had play the game.
Earl Thomas finally found a home, and it's not with the Cowboys, but it is with the Baltimore Ravens. Ravens signed the safety to a four-year, $55 million deal, $32 million guaranteed. See, how much better did the Ravens' defense get by signing Earl?
Man, they got a lot better, and they needed it because they lost a number of starters in the first couple days of free agency. But I believe it's a perfect match, not only from a skill set, what Wink Martindale wants to do as a defensive coordinator, but the culture he came from in Seattle is very similar to what John Harbaugh is doing in Baltimore in the culture. Dominated by the defense, locker room pretty much run by the defense. Now, I believe he's going to be a star and continue to be a star there in Baltimore. Nick, I know you like him.
I love him. I think he's the best player in the league at his position as long as he's on the field. The only question mark he has is health. If you look at all of those great or even after they were great, the good Seattle defenses,
yes.
They were one team in games he played and another team in games he didn't. Richard Sherman got a lot of the headlines. Cam Chancellor made the big hits. He was the best player in that Legion of Boom. Now he's playing for another great franchise as far as historic defenses. See if they can build on that top three defense they had last
Jenna,
year.
Jenna, Nick and I both believe he's a Hall of Famer.
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
All right, on to the Giants now. Big Blue traded away Odell Beckham Jr. to the Browns. All right, so Giants offense is now Saquon Barkley. It's a 38-year-old quarterback, and it's a couple other players. Many now questioning the front office, which also let Landon Collins walk, but general manager Dave Gettleman said Giants have a plan, and, quote, this is part of it. Nick, you buying that the Giants have a plan after dealing Odell?
Well, they definitely think they have a plan. Is the plan logical? Does it follow any of the decision flow you made a year ago? Those are the questions I would ask. Dave Gettleman at his introductory press conference said it's not a torch the whole place and bring in a new 53 situation. Okay, well, something's changed. Dave Gettleman said a year ago when he was hired, I was taught by Ernie Accorsi, don't quit on talent. You don't quit on talent.
What did he say 13 days ago?
Well, we didn't sign Odell Beckham to trade. So all of those things are now different. Also, if you are rebuilding, there are two aspects of your team that do not speak to rebuilding. Spending the number two pick on a draft on a position, you were talking about this before the show, see, that has the shortest shelf life of any position in football. You were trying to find a single running back that's been great for five straight years when we were talking about Le'Veon Bell, but it applies to Saquon Barkley as well. That pick makes sense if you're trying to win right now. If you're in a rebuild, okay, by the time you get it going, how good, like, where is Saquon? And then, of course, there is the albatross, there's Eli. None of this makes sense with Eli, with Eli's cap hit, with Eli's age. So maybe Gettleman can't say it. Maybe he's just hamstrung. Mm-hmm. Maybe he has a boss, and maybe his boss said, you can do whatever you want, but you can't touch number 10. I fired a coach for touching number 10. Maybe that's the truth of the matter. But unless I am told that, unless we are shown that, what I have to imagine, what I have to believe is that Dave Gettleman mismanaged the situation a year ago and now is trying to make up for some of those mistakes from a year ago. But you're a year in arrears on that and you're a draft gone on that and it's a lot harder.
Nick, going back to the coach in Ben McAdoo, who was fired over benching Eli, right?
Well, I mean, it was certainly the last straw, it seemed like.
Yeah, who fired him?
Who fired him?
Yes.
John Mara?
Well, I mean, I think the owner, right?
Okay, all right. Jenna, you've been here in New York City for a long time. When all these big decisions come about with the New York Football Giants, who makes those decisions?
Mr. Mara?
Yeah, absolutely. So I recently got a phone call, and someone gave me some good knowledge about, because I was puzzled about Gettleman, how he started off and what he was going to do, and now he's done a whole about face. And to me, this is the signs of the Mara family and them changing, because I believe this. The reason why we can't understand the Eli Manning thing is because the Mara family, they don't want Eli to play anywhere else. This is not how they do business, all right? They do business in a professional way, and they don't mind making Eli the highest paid NFL player
ever in the
history of the game. So for me, this is about ownership. The ownership changed and did an about face on Odell Beckham. That's why he was traded 2 days ago. And as far as Eli Manning and what they want for Eli Manning, man, they showed their cards when he got benched, and immediately, ever since then, everything about the Giants, it don't make sense. And that's because right now, the Mara family, they're not trying to build a football team. They're trying to, how are we going to get Eli out the door in the most respectable way? And it's hard to build a championship team or a competitive team when you're trying to do those things. So that's the only thing that makes sense with Eli Manning making the type of money that he's making right now, for them making the wholesale trades and everything that they're doing, giving up on Odell Beckham, because they changed where they were as a franchise because they thought they could win the first year with Eli, which was last year.
Here's the thing. Even if that's true, even if the Eli situation is totally out of Gettleman's hands, it is not out of his hands who you take at number two, even if it's not going to be a quarterback. It's not out of his hands to not take the deal the Colts took from the Jets and get three extra second-round picks and move back to six. It's not out of his hands to do what Coach Mangini was imploring him to do. Make Odell play that fifth-year option.
Franchise.
And then franchise him if you need to. I guarantee you John Mara wasn't saying, make Nate Solder the highest-paid tackle in football. We didn't even talk about this. Sign another guard the same offseason, 3 years, $15 million, and cut him midway through the season. One of the reasons the Giants needed a third-round pick, their third-round pick's gone. They used him in the compensatory draft. That player didn't play for them last year due to injury. There are a lot of decisions, Eli Manning independent, that don't make sense. That what I think is a simple misread of a situation with Landon Collins. You franchise him and you get a pick
back. Get something back for him.
The Chiefs were never keeping
D Ford. If you don't know what you're going to do, franchise him, give you some time to think about
it. Right, that's what the Chiefs did with D Ford. They franchised him, they traded him. Like, other than Eli, Eli's the biggest decision, but other than Eli, Gettleman, 13 months in, has been less than impressive. I think that's fair to say. And they are, as you put it yesterday, they look a lot like an expansion team with a 38-year-old quarterback and a very expensive, very talented running back. That's a tough spot to be in.
There is a team out there that did not play well like the Giants last year, but might be turning things around. Can Antonio Brown make a difference for the Raiders? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott joins the show. What's up, Bart?
What did you be talking on the intro, man? I know you've been doing other shows and everything. We run a tight ship around here. You understand?
Yeah, I saw you go in the back and crack the whip to the makeup artist in the back, man.
What are you calling the kettle?
Say you have your chocolate mocha ring.
Bart, let's talk sports.
Just revealing all our
get
state
control
secrets,
of
Bart.
Show.
Antonio Brown was officially introduced to the Raiders faithful yesterday. The marriage between AB and John Gruden will certainly be an interesting one to watch. As CeCe says, spicy versus spicy. Seven-time Pro Bowler addressed the
media.
That's
how you said it, CeCe?
For the first
Just
time.
Just put something on it.
I just put a little spice on that spicy. For the first time since this was announced, Antonio Brown cannot wait to dive into Gruden's offensive
Adam Gates
system.
Adam moment right there. What's going on? What are you doing with his eyes?
I'm just here as a sponge to soak up every information Coach got to be as successful I can be and to help the team take it to a new level. So I'm just excited to be in the same buildings with guys who've been great from the past. But I'm excited to be here and help things go to another level as far as the winning environment. My goal really is to catch Jerry Rice. I'm playing with a guy like Coach Gruden. Obviously, he know what it takes to keep me upright and fresh and to keep me out there for a long time. So. You know, securing this challenge is a challenge every year to prove my love for the game, you know, and I'm just taking it 1 year at a time.
All right, Bart, we haven't spoken to you about this particular deal. Break it down for us a little bit. What is Antonio Brown going to have to do for himself and for the organization to for this to be considered a success in Oakland?
He's going to have to get them to the playoffs in one of the toughest divisions in football. And it's going to be hard to do. I think this is more of a two-year rebuild. You look at how they retooled and they brought in the left tackle. They went out and got a slot receiver in Ty Williams, which is a good pickup. But I don't know if going forward Derek Carr is going to be on this roster next year because they have the two picks next year.
By next year, you mean 2020.
2020, and his contract isn't guaranteed. This is the last year of his guarantee. So I think that this is a two-year plan, and they want Antonio Brown here this year, but I don't know if next year. I don't think this is the best destination for him. I think it's a good destination for him, but I think still going to Green Bay would have put him in the mix for a Super Bowl this year in the near future. If he doesn't get these guys to the playoffs, it's going to be a failure. And I think it's going to be hard to do because you see what Kansas City is doing. You see what the Cleveland Browns are doing. You see what the Baltimore Ravens are doing. You see what my New York football giant Jets are doing. That Beckham thing just all in my head.
But listen,
what are they smoking?
It is all about 2020, though. Right? Like, the Raiders don't have to be in the playoffs next year for this to be. And people are like, they shouldn't have got Antonio Brown. They got to take a step forward. The offense has to show a pulse. This year, they are either going to draft, I believe, they're either going to draft one of these two quarterbacks, or they are just going to, if they can't get one of those two quarterbacks, it is a final trial year for Derek Carr. I think they're fine with moving on from Carr this season if they're able to get one of those quarterbacks, if they like one of those quarterbacks. But I think everything the Raiders have done has been building towards the first year in Vegas. The Khalil Mack trade, building towards the first year in Vegas. Getting Antonio Brown and recognizing you have him under a multi-year contract. Yeah. Being non-committal on the quarterback. All of that, to me, is building towards Las Vegas with this interim season in Oakland. Now, they can't have another disaster year where through 11 weeks of the worst team in football like they were last year. But I don't think they have to be great this season. They just have to show progression to where the Vegas fans are excited for the team that's coming into town.
I feel like we keep dancing around whether Derek Carr is going to be with this organization or not. If he is, if he isn't, is he the guy, is he not? What is the deal with Derek Carr? Do you see this organization moving forward with him as their quarterback?
Well, I'm like Bart. I just keep my options open. I don't have to commit to him long term. I do have a wide receiver. We saw last year he did have a tight end. Their tight end was very good in Gruden's system. And I'm just believing, because I know Antonio. Antonio is a gym rat. Gruden sat down with him the last couple days, and they looked at every play that he had with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Looked at over 400 pass plays. Yeah. Every position he was in the offense. That's why Gruden came in, said he can play the split end, the X receiver, in the boundary. He can play
popcorn
to the flank receiver. He can play in the backfield. Gruden is going to have to show. So for me, I'm with Bart to a certain degree. It's a tryout for 2 years. But I believe that they're going to show enough offensively that you could get fooled potentially who Derek Carr is because of Antonio. Man, Antonio's getting ready to put up numbers. He's going to put up 100 yards. He does not get hurt. He's very, very durable. He's a very smart football player, and he gets a lot of yards after the catch. So you don't have to flight the ball down the field 40 yards to be able to get productivity. So I think that he is, man, a dream come true for Carr. But, man, Carr is going to have to be successful with him. But if I'm Oakland with all those, I got three number ones this year, two next year.
Yeah.
Man, I'm going to take me a quarterback.
And how do you load up, right? The new motto is young quarterback.
They're like draft capital.
So they're perfect. You think about Fromm coming out, Herbert coming out, and Tua coming out in the next draft where they're going to have two first-round draft picks as well. How about taking that to Vegas? And I think I disagree with you to a certain extent. I think they have to replace Khalil Mack because you can't let a transcendent generational talent walk away and not replace him, give the fan base somebody to be excited about.
So a guy like Josh Allen, the kid from Kentucky.
See what got lost in the whole Kansas City San Francisco trade is that now we thought that San Francisco was going to go get that pass rusher. So that means now the Jets and the Raiders are prime for Nick Bosa, Josh Allen. See, one person, Nick Bosa, sweepstakes is open. And we're going to see, because if anybody moves up and trades with San Francisco, it's for a quarterback. So they can get the best pass rusher in the game to replace Khalil Mack. That's what you sell to Vegas as well.
Right. Also, the optics. What you're saying, man, they have to place Khalil Mack. the way the trade went with them giving up a 3 and a 5, because we knew the type of person and wide receiver that Amari Cooper had the potential to be. They got that one because they have AB. So
right.
They don't look foolish as far as the wide receiver. I do agree with you, man, wholeheartedly. They have to get a dynamic pass rusher so that people stop talking about Khalil Mack. And in this year's draft, I'm going to tell you, there's two quarterbacks that I like in the first round, not in love with the rest of them. But if you told me in this year's draft, you can only draft two offensive players, and that's the quarterback, even though there's guys with grades, offensive grade, I could draft 30 defensive players. Man, it's about 30 to 35 blue-chip defensive players. So it is very important that they get a star or one or two in that first round on the defensive side of the ball, because that will replace the Khalil Mack like they did with A.B. and Amari.
The justification for Gruden's – all the moves Gruden has made pre-Antonio Brown, which at the time a lot of them seemed curious, aside from the veteran bringing in Jordy Nelson, guys like that – it was, he wasn't sold on his quarterback, and he realized we're going to need to accumulate draft capital to get the next quarterback. If they do what you're saying, which is not draft Kyler Haskins here, that they get the pass rusher, which I think is a really interesting point, that Nick Bosa, who most people think is the best player in the draft, could be available in the 3-4 range. Well, now the value proposition there is enormous. If what you're saying is true, the other thing the Raiders, we say they have three first in this year's draft and two in the following year. When you've got the top pick and then you've got the two picks in the 20s, if you're focused on a quarterback for 2020, that's the type of spot where you can flip one of those for a 2020 first-round pick.
Yes.
So you're still coming away with two first-round picks this year, and then you have three in the year you're talking about the quarterback.
Position's a need for them, right? They have to get cornerbacks. They don't have any cornerbacks. So you think about Greedy. You think about all the corners that's going to fall down there. You got to get your corner as well. So it's about getting things to build around your quarterback when he shows up. The hardest positions and the most valuable positions in football, left tackle, cornerback, pass rusher, because you got to be able to protect the quarterback and you got to be able to defend the quarterback.
They just paid for their left tackle in Trent Brown.
Exactly.
You think they can draft the pass rusher in the top five.
Yep.
And then a corner maybe with one of the picks in the 20s.
Absolutely. Then next year, move up before Herbert, Fromm, or Tua. Those are going to be the guys available.
I believe it's really important for John Gruden, if he can show and have success with Antonio after leaving Pittsburgh the way he left the great franchise, they open themselves up as a team like they used to do Oakland Raiders. When they go to Vegas, they can get guys to start coming to Vegas for less money.
Yeah.
No state taxes. Man, I would like,
they can get Nick to go there.
Telling you, players will go to Vegas. So that's important how that relationship works out.
All right. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.